Also may have something to do with the time of the day, but it's another detail. Okay. Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryankara Vavahai Tejasvi Navadhikamastu Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Okay, so this is in text 27. These philosophers say that by cultivating fruit of work and speculative philosophy, one should make improvements in the material world and in this way please God. Right? Because the idea is God's given us the world to enjoy. Right? Because that's the position. I think it's in the... Yeah, it's like the third or fourth verse, I think, of the second chapter. Then it says, you know, God says he gives all this to them. Somehow or another it's minus all the niceties of the garden, but, you know, whatever it is, it's at least, you know, how you say? Possession turns sand into gold. And in this case, we could probably literally say sand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So then, okay. So here's then, okay. When did we? Oh no, we had class on Friday, right?
Yeah.
In this. Okay. Okay. So then. So, okay. Throughout its 2000-year history, Christianity has exhibited a persistent tendency to divide and proliferate into parties, sects, heresies, and movements. The above analysis, Bhaktivinoda Thakur disparages some especially illogical philosophical tenets in circulation throughout the Christian world, tenets which may not necessarily be shared in common by its various denominations. Hence, just as Bhaktivinoda Thakur proceeds with caution, so too is the reader advised. Right? Page 52.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, in other words, this idea is that I will do nice work, pious work, and apply my logic and intelligence in a way to improve the world, right? So now what we see here is that the element of, like, the combination, the aspect of I do good work, I will enjoy myself, like Jaimini. Mm-hmm. At the same time as you have then the non-Vedic element of, how do you say, the selfless sense gratification, right? That I will use my logic and knowledge and everything to enjoy, right? Because you have to combine that, because the selfish wouldn't be supported here, right? Mm. Like that. So then you have to be able to perform here, okay? Here it says, the followers of the religion may have no power to worship God selflessly, right? Because here, selfless, we're talking about pure devotion. But within the material, then this is called selfless. Mm-hmm. Right, it's not on the spiritual platform, and the material platform it's called selfless.
Yeah.
In general, their idea is that by cultivating fruit of work and speculative philosophy, one should work to make improvements in the material world, and in this way please God. By building hospitals and schools and by doing various philanthropic works, they try to do good to the world and thus please God. Right? So in other words, it's not just I do this, it'll make society better, so therefore I will enjoy, everyone will enjoy, and I will leave a legacy here. Mm-hmm. Right? Means, but that aspect is there. But the idea is, the overall idea is that God will be pleased by doing good work, you know, like that. So in that way, it's you could say it's a step above just your regular moralist, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a theistic moralist. So they're actually in a better position. Right? Worship of God by performing fruit of work, karma, and by engaging in philosophical speculation, jnana, is very important to them. Right? Because you should improve the society. You always see. It's interesting, even though that there was such a push against science by the, you know, general Christian community, they always are engaged in science. The difficulty was is that they didn't appreciate the science that was there before in your original cultures, before pre-Christianity, because their science and their philosophy or religion were combined. Mm. Right? So in other words, to establish monotheism, then you had to throw out everything connected with their philosophy, which meant science and culture. Mm. Right? Administration, music, you know, taking a bath, you know, any you know, important element, it all had to be removed.
Yes.
Right? But they themselves are always very, how do you say, industrious. Because you always see that they're trying to improve. And that's always been the problem, because generally speaking, is all the intellectuals that the church had problem with, they all would have identified themselves with that Christian denomination. You know what I'm saying? It's not like Da Vinci was Jewish or something. You know what I'm saying? Like that may have been, but whatever it is, you know, underlined. But the point is they were all Christians, right? And then you had, what's his name? With an A. Then he like combined Christian theology with
Aquinas, Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah, Aquinas, along with Aristotle. You know, all the A's got together, right? Like that.
Right. So it seems like a great ego is involved, that we throw everything out and do our own thing, but it doesn't mean that it's better
any
than,
different. Yeah. No, it's no different. The only difference you could say is that there's one God instead of many. Mm. You know, or the one God is, you know, the God of Abraham, you know.
Well, it's the same God, isn't it?
Yes, but just in case, you know, the one God happened to be, you know, somebody else other than Abraham. You know, he had a pot on his head or something like that. You know. Does that make sense? You know, so it's because, as you mentioned, as is mentioned here, is that into these different parties, sects, heresies, movements, it constantly is breaking down into these, because the philosophy is so general, and it opens the door for a wide variety of proportions of how much fruit of work, how much speculative philosophy, and how much pleasing God. Right? You know, so those who are more into pleasing God, less into fruit of work, let's say speculative philosophy or making improvements in the world, would not have been appreciated by other groups of Christians who were very much into their fruit of work or their philosophical speculation to make improvements. Right? Yeah. Does that make sense? So, depending upon what was the proportion, then there was always a problem. Like, what's his name? Our Birdman.
Birdman?
Yeah, he liked to take off his clothes and go on the roof and fly like a bird.
From
Italy. Yeah, Assisi. Francis, okay.
Francis?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he did it so much later in life, but earlier in life, that seemed to be popular. Like, they had to get him up the roof many times there, you know, like that. So, Francis was interested in more the pleasing God. Just, you know, not fruit of work, not so much speculation, more just faith and trying to please God. So that came into clash, you know, originally with the mainstream of the church, which very much appreciated those aspects, you know? You know, in other words, you should do these things, but not too far. You know, it's just like, you know, it's like this society. Is that there's no rule you can't drink alcohol, but you shouldn't drink so much you can't drive, or that, you know, you can't function properly in the party. You know what I'm saying? You know, men and women should, can talk to each other freely, but at the same time, they shouldn't start an affair. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So you have all these strange elements that everything's there, but there's a cultural concept of what the limit is. And depending upon the time, that limit is more or less, right? You know, in other words, yeah. In other words, if you drank so much you died, that would be too much. But if you didn't remember anything and you trashed the place, that was perfectly fine. You know, then there's others who, you know, you shouldn't trash the place. But if you don't remember anything, that's fine. Others, if you don't remember anything, now that's getting stupid. You know, does that make sense? So it just depends upon what time in history all these different things are there. Does that make sense? So this is the difficulty, is that, and these are all fit within this religion. It's such a broad range. Right? That's the idea. So then here, they have no power to understand pure devotional service, Shuddha Bhakti, because the point is it's about enjoying yourself. Right?
Yeah.
Which is free of fruit of work and philosophical speculation. Worship of God done out of a sense of duty is never natural or unselfish. Right? Right. So worship of God done out of a sense of duty, that it's only, I'm supposed to do it. I mean, the point is it won't be pure devotion because it's natural that you'd want to do it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So you always see those who are good and they do follow their religion because they're supposed to, but they're very, very dry and formal and sometimes even very hard-hearted. Then you have those who want to do it, and they always, these two parties always have a problem, right? And unselfish, that I'm doing this because I'm supposed to, and therefore God better reward me. I'm working hard. I'm making a lot of sacrifice here. You know, so it's expected you're going to get some very good results, right? Quote, God has been kind to us and therefore we should worship him. These are the thoughts of lesser minds. Why is this not a good way to worship God? Because you think, no, that sounds good. He's done good to us, we should worship him. But then the problem comes is because one may think, if God is not kind to me, then I will not worship him. That's right. But otherwise it sounds good. You know, God has given us this bounty, so let us offer our thanks. We should be offering our thanks anyway. But the point is you know, because we have a relationship with the Lord. But here's, he's given us facility, therefore we're thanking. Yes.
Prabhupada says in one lecture, people go to church and they pray, God give us today our daily bread. This is not love of God, this is love of bread.
Yes. Well, at least they know who to go to, right? You know, they figured it out. You know, why bother with some lower distributor if we're going to the top? Right, you know. One wishes that God will be kind by allowing one to serve him, then there is nothing wrong with that desire. Right? In other words, having that desire that God allows us to serve him rather than God has been nice to us materially, therefore I'll serve him. But the religion under discussion does not see it that way. Right? One wishes that God will be kind by allowing one to serve him. That's all that you wish is service. Occasionally you get someone who comes up with that philosophy, but generally they fit into this group here, which was, what was it? Party sect heresies. They generally end up as a heresy because then they're asking one to do something more than other Christians are willing to do, so therefore the other Christians will feel guilty, so therefore if you make them a heretic and burn them at the stake, then everybody's happy.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. This religion sees God's kindness in terms of one's enjoyment. Because remember, most of the people burnt at the stake were Christians.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't that, you know, they somehow or another came across a whole group of pagans or something like that. It was Christians. Like that. This religion sees God kindness in terms of one's enjoying a happy life in this material world. So if someone's happy, then that means he's good. So if you take, I'll just give an example, is that you have your old established families in America, and kind of based on this, then, you know, because the whole thing of America was forms of Christianity that weren't appreciated, you know, back on the mainland, right? You know, or even on the island, right? In the other case, Europe didn't appreciate it. So they came to America, right? So to find their religious freedom. So now it's not an uncommon kind of unspoken concept that the person's there, he has his big nice house, he's got his, you know, lawn, and he's got his, you know, a few cars, you know, everything's very nice, his family is there, you know, he's got his kids, they're all growing up, they're all behaving very nicely, he's got a really good job, his wife is really well situated socially, and things like that, their kids are topping their education and everything, doing nice, they have a bright future also to get, you know, be well situated socially, they got lots of money, and they're doing okay. That's generally considered a good Christian. Mm. You know what I'm saying? It's a bit waspy, of course, but you know,
waspy.
White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Waspy. That's
of course.
Don't mess with them. They sting. Yeah, not the band. No, we're not talking about those guys. Those may be a little bit different than this particular stereotype.
Demographic.
Yeah, a slight different demographic. Does that make sense? Yes?
Yeah.
And this is?
This is the continuation, I guess.
Oh. Why, this is the last page?
I think most of that.
Oh, okay. Okay, does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So in order to impart to the reader a greater sense of appreciation for our own Guru Parampara's spotless teachings, there is merit in providing a brief overview of Christianity's history. Because basically it's not that one's trying to say, yes, Vaishnavism is better. We're just showing us, no, there is Vaishnavism, then there's all the varieties of conditioning by which one actually views Vaishnavism. Does that make sense? Because Vaishnavism is the natural religion of the soul. But when it's covered by karma and jnana, depending upon the proportions and the way it's put together, then you'll end up with this variety of philosophies and religions. Because everybody's looking to be happy. Everyone's looking for eternity. Right? Because even if you say, oh, this one lifetime, then it's all over, like the pessimist, but then I will be happy eternally. Even though I'm dead, right? You know, like that. But I'll be happy. Right? Dead and happy. Huh?
Yes. So even in Vaishnavism, we can see them in Shikshastaka, in the last verse, then Mahaprabhu prays like, you know, that Ashli Shiva Padaratam Pinas. And this is even in Vaishnavism, this is like top consciousness.
Yes, yes, yes.
So this is not a common, it's not like foreign.
Means it's the common, everybody knows is the goal, but whether one's able to apply it at the present situation. But at least one knows the full philosophy and the goal. The difficulty comes is generally your variety of trying to situate yourself, you know, as nicely as you can, devotional service, and as nicely as you can in the material world. That's generally the neophyte position. You know, so that's why it'll be mixed. You know, and then within the Madhyama, there's generally less of that. One's comfortable with the conditioning, and one is comfortable to engage that in the Lord's service. But, you know, the thing is one's still comfortable with that conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that you're saying that it's special or better or that it's itself devotional service. It's just you're comfortable with those tools to use. Well, the neophyte may want to, how you say, not justify, there's another word where you kind of say it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Rationalize. Well, you rationalize that, you know, my situation's okay and all that. That was the discussion yesterday in Bhagavatam class, that rationalization about how I dress, you know, is okay. You know, I have philosophical back, rational, you know, I rationalize the thing by giving philosophical backing why it's okay, rather than just, you end your discussion by just saying, I like it, that's all. I like wearing these, and I don't feel comfortable wearing anything else. But if you do that, you lose the social position of being advanced in devotional service. You know what I'm saying? But you do end the argument. If someone comes up and says, why are you wearing karmi clothes? Because I like it. I'm more comfortable. What can you say?
Yeah.
Right? So it ends the discussion. So it comes up because you want both. Therefore, then it comes up as something strange. So it's true. It means even within devotional service, then you do have the cloudings of these elements. But because there's the acceptance of the eternal form of the Lord, they still don't really get in the way of devotional service. So slow it down, but they won't actually stop it. You know? While when one hasn't accepted that the eternal position of the Lord, then the clouding is so strong that you get the elements of the eternal religion of the soul coming out. But, you know, it doesn't come out in the normal way. Rather than, or, you know, like we were saying before, is that being in the material world is unfortunate, so therefore I should take more seriously my devotional practices. Well, here, I'm in the material world, this is unfortunate, so you walk around, you know, flogging yourself or something with a cat of nine. You know, it's like that. So it's that's not exactly what the acharyas had in mind. You know what I'm saying? So element, everything that's going on is elements of the natural, original religion of the soul, but it's coming out through, you know, the colorings of goodness, passion, and ignorance, and so much variety of combinations that you end up with all the varieties of philosophies in that. Because the point is it's the soul that's covered, not something else. You know, it means if you have a gold ring, it's covered with mud. Occasionally, a little bit, you know, something gets a little thinner. You can see something there. You know, but still, the rest of it's mud, you know. Does that make sense? So it's like that, is that the coverings on the jiva, so therefore all these philosophies are aberrations in it. So technically, you can take them into devotional service. Mm-hmm. And you can use this to identify them in devotional service. But still, there's a great difference between someone who's not a devotee that has these coverings and someone who is. Right? Because someone who is then actually has an understanding of what the process is, though they may be very attached to certain situations or that, or facilities. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Maharaj, could I say that one of the reasons that Christianity spread so much is because the jiva is looking for enjoyment and it allows it its ground?
Yeah. You could. But then, if you really want to take that, yeah, you could.
There's a mix between God and enjoyment, but it's...
Yeah, but then you would have to, if you want to take that line, then one would have to actually give credit where credit's due. Okay, you know what I'm saying?
To go to the karma demands before.
No, before that. Okay, I'll teach you a little rhyme, or I'll tell you a little rhyme my mother taught me.
Okay.
Roses are red, violets are bluish. If it wasn't for Jesus, we'd all be Jewish. You never heard that one?
It didn't reach my side.
Okay. It's
too far down.
Okay. Either that or we have a weird mother, one or the other.
Could be both.
Huh?
Could be both.
Could be both, yes. Does that make sense? So the idea was this, the Jewish idea, this is, you know, they very much have this also. But it was part of the lifestyle and all that. So Christianity, to practice the same thing and not be Jewish and not be pagan, then had to start from zero and create a whole thing. So they're only really successful at doing that after, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. You know, so in the meantime, is so much happens because of a lack of culture. Does that make sense? Yeah, because from what I know historically, you don't have so much like in Judaism. If there's another group of practicing Jews that they're considered, then you may consider that they're not up to standard, but I haven't heard of anyone getting burnt at the stake or anything. You know, there's a tolerance of it. It's just that, you know that you're doing better and they're doing worse. That's all right. So, you know.
In many cases they are.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, but the you understand, some kind of the Christianity is unique because there is no culture to check these things. What is there to check? Something like the Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, if there isn't any, because they don't have the culture. They have to develop it. And then with time, now that's developed. Okay, now there's more of a tolerance. But at the same time, it's by doing that, they kind of lessen their own position, their own theology. You know what I'm saying? Because the culture element is its weakest. Right? The faith is strong, but the culture element is the weakest. Like as we mentioned, in Judaism, the cultural element is the strongest. So you can be Jewish and not have faith in God. You know, I mean, it's within the general group. You know what I'm saying? It's not considered ideal. You know what I'm saying? But there's a common... So like in Hinduism, you have the common culture. Variety of philosophies, but common culture. So because of that, it's held together more strongly. Does that make sense?
Seems that Islam also has stronger culture than Christianity.
Yeah, because they just had a culture and then they just added, you know, monotheism to it. So they didn't really change. The only thing they changed was the aspect of whether they had many gods or one god. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is you have all these different things. You can just analyze it according to what's happening.
And even in Christianity, you see that according to different times, they borrow elements from one culture.
Yes, of course.
They took a flavor.
Yeah, so then with time, then there's enough that you actually have something. You know, like a Bach, Beethoven, then they can make music and not get burnt at the stake. You know, so then, okay, then now they've added something to it like that. Does that make sense? Okay, so then here's this element, which is a quotation. Both read the Bible day and night, but thou readest black where I read white. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, two people are reading the Bible, and one gets one thing, one gets the other, because it has such a wide range. You know, if you say the term Catholic means broad, mm-hmm. right? And so that's the thing. It's so broad. Everybody can be, all varieties of materialism can be accommodated, as long as you're willing to accept that there's, you know, one supreme God who's, you know, in charge of all this materialism. You know. Does that make sense? Yeah.
We also notice, like in Brazil, that the newborn Christians, they don't even have architecture as an element anymore.
No.
They just hire one, let's say, a place where it was a factory or a deposit, and they put some signs in front and plastic chairs, and that's the church. So even the element of having a nice place for God is just a factory.
No, it's got that, because that's the Protestant thing. It's not about the form of it. It's only about the mood, the faith. You know, so then that becomes a problem, because then. How did I take a picture? I took a picture. It didn't even come up the picture thing, but it took a picture.
Maybe it was default function before you switched it off.
No, because I just opened it. Oh, maybe if you push these both at once.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, but who knows what the picture is, right? Is it of that, or is it, you know, what is it?
Well, maybe it's wrong camera or back camera.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. I'll have to find out later.
So what did you learn in Gurukul today? Well, I learned when you
push both things at once, and it takes a picture. We don't know what it takes a picture of.
That's tomorrow.
Oh, unless it took a picture of itself.
Oh, maybe.
Of the screen.
Yeah.
There's also something where it takes a picture of the screen.
Yeah.
John. Okay, historical background. Quote, all the good in Christianity can be traced to Jesus, all the bad to Paul. Franz Overbeck, whoever he is. Okay. Beginning with the Apostle Paul, who had never met Jesus. Really? Paul never met Jesus. I don't know enough about it. I thought they all were hanging out. Wasn't he one of the fishermen?
No, 50 years later.
He came later.
The gospel.
But of the 12 apostles, he wasn't one of the 12, or this is a different Paul?
I think it was.
Oh, I mean, the 12 apostles is counted later. Now the church calls it 12 apostles. So Paul wasn't in the picture when they painted the Passover.
I think Paul, he wrote the,
you know, they're at the big table and all that. Paul's not there?
I don't think
so. So, okay, so that's because they say there's 12 there, but there's only 11 there, but there's 12 people. So then that also leaves open that that 12th one was Jesus' wife.
I don't have an opinion on that.
Okay, you don't have an opinion. Okay. Okay, but in any case, Paul came along later.
50 years later.
50 years later.
I think so.
Wow.
He couldn't then sit with them.
Huh?
He couldn't dine with them at the table if he came 50 years later.
Yeah, he couldn't have, unless he was there and then he got so scared and he blooped and came back 50 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Paul, who had never met Jesus, Christianity broke away from its Jewish roots and began preaching in the Gentile world. Religious scholar Holger Kirsten makes these observations about the Apostle Paul, who transformed Christianity from a messianic Jewish movement into Gentile religion. Quote, the earliest documents concerning Jesus are the writings of Paul. He came from a strict Jewish family but was able to acquire Roman citizenship, for which his father paid a high price. This permitted him to change his original Jewish name, Saul, to Paulus. He belonged to the upper class and was raised in the strict Farsian tradition. What is Farsian?
Farsian. You know? Farsian? I don't know.
Farsian.
Pharisee, yeah.
Hmm? Oh, the Pharisees.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you have the Pharisees and you have the other one.
The other ones, I forgot what the name was, but they were you know, more Shastris, you know, more according to the, like, following, like,
like smart. Yeah, more like smart. Yeah, because those are the ones that seem to be have a problem with Jesus' position.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they were the smartest. And the Pharisees, they were the second group.
Okay. So they're more... Okay. He received an extensive and profound education, mastered the Greek language, and was widely read in Greek poetry and philosophy. The church historian Wilhelm Nestle... So it means when it didn't work out in the church, he started a chocolate factory.
That's my opinion.
Okay. He needed money for the church, so he started. Okay, express the issue in the following manner. Quote, what we refer to as Christianity today is largely an artificial doctrine of rules and precepts created by Paul and more worthy of the designation Paulinism. It replaced Christ's gospel with a gospel about Christ. That's interesting. Nice. It replaced Christ's gospel with the gospel about Christ, rather than being what he taught. It's a teaching about him. Paulinism in this sense means a misinterpretation and indeed counterfeiting of Christ's actual teachings as arranged and initiated by Paul. It has long been a truism for modern theologians, as well as researchers on ecclesiastical history, that the Christianity of the organized church, with its central tenet of salvation through the death and suffering of Jesus, has been based on a misinterpretation. Okay. Because it was interesting, in when you go to in Rome, then you have the main church where the Vatican is, that's Peter.
Yes.
Right? That's Peter's place.
Yes.
You know, Peter was the rock. He's the...
He was?
The rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, Peter's the rock. It means the church will be based on Peter. And I literally, where his you know, tomb is where they built the church, right?
Okay.
And so then, but, and there's, you know, a big whole scene there. And there are a lot of people. But another part of the city, there's a huge church of Paul's. But nothing's happening there. It's just kind of there and nothing special. It's just right there. The roads are there and everything. It's just like any other building. So it seems that somehow or another, even here, even though it's been established by Paul, still the sentiment leans towards Peter. Somehow. Not sure. Paul also prepared the path to the later ecclesiastical teachings on original sin and the Trinity. In 18th century, the English philosopher Lord Bolingbroke could make out two completely different religions in the New Testament, that of Jesus and that of Paul. Kant, Lessing, Fichte, and Schelling, that's some wild names, also sharply distinguished the teachings of Jesus from those of the disciples. A great number of reputable modern theologians support and defend these observations. Paul disregarded many teachings of Jesus. Instead, he placed Jesus upon a pedestal and turned him into the Christ figure that Jesus never intended to be. So this thing of therefore Jesus as God, that was not the intention. He was a preacher, so Paul created that. And then also, if you deify, that means then you distract from the teachings to more just the focus on the person. Right? You know, the person is special. So if you get caught up in teachings and that, you're disregarding the person. So therefore, then you could say that they're not having the proper attitude. Does that make sense? So you can distract them from trying to understand the philosophy by saying, but you're not considering the person. But the point is when it comes to a preacher, what they're preaching is the person. That's why they've come. The theologian Alois Grimm. Did he hear the Grimm brothers? It is?
Same spelling.
No, I'm just wondering because there were two brothers. I wonder what his brother thought. Has sized up the situation thus, quote, however deeply these teachings may have become ingrained in Christian thought, they still have absolutely nothing to do with the real Jesus. If it is ever possible to discover any profound knowledge of truth in the heart of Christianity, it will only be by rejecting obvious counterfeits that have been considered so sacrosanct as to be untouchable. Is that how you spell sacrosanct? Well, it's the first time I've ever seen it. To be untouchable, and by turning to the true, pure teachings of Jesus and the real essence of religion.
Sacrosanct is like almost like you know, like croissant is like a type of bread, and then sang is like with, you know, it's like the Latin for with. So like with bread, like with substance.
Okay, so this is with sacrity or something.
With bread, you know, with substance.
Okay. So you're recommended that everyone take some of this for breakfast every day.
The chocolate.
Hmm?
With the chocolate.
Oh, okay.
Crossing with the chocolate.
Okay. But here you're saying croissant with the sand.
Sans, it means without, right?
Without
croissant.
Without
no croissant. not even worth sitting down. You know. There's no for breakfast. You know.
But you're saying croissant is with bread.
It's no, croissant means is like the French for bread. You know, this curved bread.
Yeah.
Like thick, and then sans is from sans, like sans means without.
So without bread.
Yeah, without.
So this is without bread.
Yeah, that's.
So you were saying the croissant is with bread.
No, I was thinking that it was.
With, but it's without.
Yeah, without.
So it's without bread. So you couldn't have it for breakfast.
Untouchable, you know, it's considered untouchable. Unworthy breakfast. I can remember that for the rest of the life.
Okay.
Deep analysis.
Yes, deep analysis. Okay. We have it.
Seems like some people are hungry.
Could be. It's a bit maybe after no breakfast. And, you know, yeah.
No breakfast,
yeah, lunch. Either that or had a very early breakfast.
But this is an English language, but then not word. I mean, it seems like two words from France.
It means much, generally anything in English that has to do with food or culture is from French. You know. Yeah. You know, 'cause, I mean, a bunch of boiled peas and carrots sitting on your plate. That's not fun.
Right,
that's butter.
Yes, yes. Butter is the, I think.
Then you don't. You only need to remove the peas and carrots. Then you have something.
Yeah, yeah. Then at least you have the butter, right? You know. So, because that was, I was told, is the three essential elements of French cooking: butter, butter, and butter. Yeah, so at least they have something right. Yes.
In a book by Satyaraj Maharaj Prabhu.
Satyaraj Prabhu Maharaj.
I was confused. He wrote about Christianity and
Hinduism.
That's what he called it.
Okay.
And in this part about Paul, he says that he called the Pauline doctrine. Paul introduced the idea that without faith, works have no meaning.
Okay.
And that, in his reverent heart's opinion, is what led to the Protestant idea that if you believe in Christ, but you don't need to do anything else.
Okay. Yeah, that could definitely do it. Because the point was, is Jesus is showing that that's why he ran into a problem with the smartest, right? Pharisee, but isn't there also the Sarisees? No, it's the same. No, that's so with the people. But so their point was, you do the ritual, you get the result. Well, Jesus' point is no, there's the attitude, but then you're placing the ritual as supportive of the attitude, but if you don't present it properly, like here you're saying in the Pauline doctrine, then you end up that you don't require the support, you only have to have the faith. But it's just like everything, every attitude is supported by some form, an activity. Like, how do you know the person's sincere? Is because of the particular activities in that he does. Right? So the two go together, but which is primary? So the smartest take, the ritual is primary. And the attitude is, you know, nice. But, you know, here it was trying to reverse it, but the attitude is a problem and the ritual is supportive. So you can end up with either one of these Niyamagrahas. You keep the ritual, throw out the attitude, keep the attitude, throw out the ritual. Both of those are Niyamagraha.
That for us would be the smartest and the sahajas. Right?
Yeah, the smartest sahajas. So all it is he threw out the smartest and established the sahaja. Right? While the preacher is trying to establish, no, you have to have the two balanced. But you have to understand the attitude is the primary, the ritual is the support. Right? So that's the difficulty. So even within Vaishnava, people take it too far one way and too far the other. So it's just that's normal within the neophyte. They can't get the balance. Right? So once you get to Nishta, that means there is a balance now. Yes. Right, but before Nishta, the tendency is a little bit this way, a bit that way. Mm. Okay. Theological controversies. As early as 65 years after the time of Christ, Paul engaged in fierce debates with the original apostles. Paul held that Jesus' advent freed the people from following the old law, that faith alone was required. But the law is how you express the faith. Meanwhile, the apostles taught that Jesus came to enforce the old law and that faith without work is dead. Right? So here's what you're talking about. The faith works polemic has been going on for centuries, and countless forms of Christianity have engaged have emerged as variations on this theme. Right? Because some accept more of the old law, some don't. Like, you know, there's some Christians that the Old Testament, just no one even worries about it. Some, they know all the stories and all that. So it just depends upon how much. So, yeah. Yeah, so does that make sense? So the original apostles, then they feel that Jesus came to make one a better practitioner of Judaism by making the faith prominent. Well, I mean, but keeping the law. But he's saying, no, it's all about the faith. We don't require the law. So then that means then you can become, then that way then all the Gentiles can remain Gentiles and be Christian. While otherwise, if the Gentiles went up to that point, if the Gentiles wanted to follow Jesus, they would naturally become Jewish.
Mm.
Yes.
What is the meaning of Gentile?
Gentile means not Jewish. You know, just like what does savage mean? It means not English. You know.
My English teacher in Hyderabad International School. I was
Hyderabad.
Here. Yes, I
Hyderabad International School.
Yes.
There's a Hyderabad in Brazil?
No, here in Andhra Pradesh.
You went to school in Andhra Pradesh.
Yes, in 82.
This is another story along with the armadillo as a pet. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, so we moved to England, I think. So I was drawing a graph and I didn't use a ruler. So he just referred to me, "You cannibal, can't you use a ruler?" So
that's an important story.
The cannibal was completely destroyed in the middle of the class.
And the cannibals draw without a ruler.
That's what they could learn from the
cannibals. Okay. That means, so that means the modern artists are cannibals. Okay. Yeah, okay. I guess it was a step. Is that a step up from Headhunter? You could just point out how his head would look so nice in your collection.
There was a vengeance of the students, right? Because he had these very big eyes. And then the students called him frog eyes.
Oh, frog
eyes. That was like
revenge. Okay, okay. So the cannibals got back at him. Text 28. So is that kind of clear what's happening here? So that's the reason that there's a problem, and it's not just a consistent point, is that in doing this, just keeping the faith meant you got rid of the old law. So what's the new law? And especially seeing that the first documentation of the teachings was by Paul. That means the others were just taking, means or about Jesus, right? But the others would just take his teachings and follow that and preach that. So then you already had a consistent religion, lifestyle, everything that you were just continuing with. So he was throwing all that out. So you keep the faith, and what are you left with? So naturally, the thing is you're left with the non-Jewish culture, which at that time happened to be, of course, he's not going to just go for, you know, something off the street. He's a Roman citizen, right? So it had to have something of that kind of aristocratic element. Does that make sense?
There was one priest in Brazil. He's a very open-minded person. He's the director of a big school. And I was teaching English for him, so we discussed. He mentioned that in that time, all the early Christians with still the mood of Jesus was in Rome trying to preach. And the Roman just decided that now this is our religion. And the lifestyle was all out. And for them, we were fighting underground, doing all the preaching, printing the things and trying to do some preaching work. It was just like now they become one with this lack of culture, as you're mentioning. And I think Paul is behind a lot of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, by the sounds of it, then it seems to be it's his direction they're taking. Because basically you're deifying the Lord, deifying Jesus. You know, everybody comes deified. And so then, you know, to a more extreme than whatever it was already was. But then, and then it's just that culture becomes the culture. So you just take out, the various, Roman sacrifices and their gods and whatever's left, and that's the culture. So he was attached to his more intellectual kind of position, you know, the intellectual worldly kind of position and that social position he had, and then adding Christianity to that as opposed to having to actually be a proper practicing, Jew, which didn't have necessarily a position in the, you know, Roman world. You know, it means they were part of the Roman place, but you weren't necessarily a citizen. Right? Did I know that right?
Yeah.
It means if you're part of, you know, Israel, you weren't a Roman citizen.
No. It was actually under Romans. The Israel was under Roman Empire at that time.
Yes.
So they were like local people, but
that they Romans weren't citizens
in a different category.
Yeah. So somehow or another, Paul got into that category, which is rare, and then somehow or another wanted to function within that.
Yeah.
You know, so one has to be careful, because otherwise then what happens is then you add in, that's the Roman clothes, the Roman food, the Roman, you know, festivals, the Roman everything. Because otherwise before that, you know, festival meant Jewish festivals. But after this, then we see is what's been done is you've added in the Roman festivals and just, you know, Christized them. Like that. Does that make sense? So we can see is that it's a actually technically something very different. You know, but that faith in Jesus, that's the consistent element between the two. But somehow or another, it's the form of it's been lost, and because of that, then so many difficulties come up.
Satyaraj Prabhu, in his book, he goes to Constantine, and he says now how Constantine took that, and now he was not a clergyman, he was basically administrator. And he operated many changes in karma and many other, let's say, tenets to now create this new, let's say, philosophy.
Yeah, we had to make it so it would fit into the culture nicely. That's the thing. If you're going to make it so the Roman world is it going to accept this as a religion, then it has to be that the Roman culture and value system remains, just you remove their gods and put in, you know, the God of Abraham. That's basically. You know. So all that's being allowed because of the way Paul did it. Because otherwise, if you leave the old law, why can't you leave everything else? Like that. Okay. So then text 28. Some others say that God has no form. He is all-pervading. Still, following the rules of Scripture, many worship Him, bow before Him, pray to Him, and serve Him in many ways. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The followers of this philosophy, which in modern times has appeared in many versions, claim that God is formless and all-pervading. For these people, philosophical speculation is the most important activity. People who say God has form are stunted dwarfs. Where's the first part of the quote?
Yeah.
Maybe it's supposed to be around stunted dwarfs. Okay. This thought always agitates their minds. In our path of knowledge, we know that God is formless and all-pervading.
Oh,
that's from this. Okay. It has a form, our stunted dwarves. Okay. It's just, here. This thought always agitates their minds. In our path of knowledge, we know that God is formless and all-pervading. Still doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
These people cannot go beyond these kinds of thoughts. The unintelligent people who follow this path have an idea of God that is foolish idolatry. They think that God is formless and all-pervading, like the material sky. Thus, the object of their worship is material. Beyond the 24 elements is the individual spirit soul. And beyond the individual soul is God, who has numberless qualities, whose form is spiritual and who is all-pervading, whose true nature is different from the formless God, the impersonalist imagine, who is the supreme master, who is supremely merciful, who is the individual spirit soul's true friend, who has all opulences and who is the supreme controller, and whose handsome transcendental form the followers of this philosophy have no power to see or understand. So in other words, those who follow that the Lord is formless cannot appreciate that the Lord has form. They always think that somehow or another that they're, if you conceive of form as the Lord, they think that there's something wrong with you because it's less intelligent, right? It takes more intelligence to appreciate the formless.
Yeah.
Right, but the problem is to be able to accept that the formless is there, but the form is beyond that takes even more intelligence. Right? So that's the problem. So they somehow or another think they're the most intelligent. Right? Because most of the people, just, you know, they're dealing on faith. So, you know, they don't require... In other words, the idea of logic is to instill faith. We already have faith, so then there's not so much need of using the logic to get it. But it's good if the logic is there so that you can explain it in case somebody comes up with something that's, you know, contradictory. Then you can explain it. Otherwise, people get disturbed, yes.
So then impersonalists, they're blinded by their own pride.
Basically.
They can't see beyond that.
No, and their pride is based on their so-called intelligence. Yeah. They always think, but I'm very intelligent.
It's actually very limited intelligence.
Yes, it's limited.
Because they have only 30% of the whole thing.
Yes, but what they don't catch is that all their intellectualism, intellectualizing, is still based on the opening and closing of the mental process.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? The mind is going to bring in the information, and the mind is going to make the conclusion, and you can intellectualize in the middle. You know, so it's kind of like it's like a sandwich. Yeah. You know, and that, you have the intellectual stuff, but it's still, there's the bread.
Yeah.
You know, the bread's on the two sides, and then you have the intellectualizing in the middle. So, you know.
Could he be referring to the Muslims here?
That we'll see. Because here is, that means the point is even the Christians, if you ask them, they'll say God is formless. You know, so it still comes down to that. You know, but I think he's taking that the one is your very, you know, basically kind of like the element of karma with speculation. This side takes it, it's more speculation and less on the karma. Like that, you know. In other words, everything's karma and jnana. Like that. These philosophers' worship of God is very faulty and incomplete. The worship consists only of bowing down and reciting prayers. Only bowing down and reciting prayers, the worship is very material in nature. Again and again, chewing various kinds of philosophical speculation. They are afraid to worship the glorious spiritual deity form of God and become his servant, a servant completely sold to him. Agitated in this way, they preach to the world that one should not imagine a spiritual form of God. They say that to worship the deity form of God is to worship only a statue made of material elements. These people have no power to understand the true form of God, a form beyond the touch of matter, a form that is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. So their worship is bowing down and offering prayers, but then the problem is then they think that there is no form, and that's not real. It's just something that you use. In other words, it's kind of the same group as that. He has no form, but it's going to be easier to worship a form, so they worship a form, but the actual point is there is no form. Right?
Is a big black cube in Mecca, is it not a big shaligram?
I heard the shaligram's inside. But,
okay.
But in any case, still, it's something to focus on. Yes.
According to this description, Judaism also fits in.
Yes. No, it also fits. It means when you get into the philosophy, then it fits.
Yeah.
But as far as, yeah.
Because they're really scared from the forms.
Yeah. No, very much like that, because you have to watch out. All those people from, where is it, Baal? Because somehow other than Baal, that's where they do all those kind of deity worship. B-A apostrophe A-L. How do you say that?
Middle East.
Huh?
Middle East, you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's
right. Oh, yeah.
Don't remember. Like that. I think they also worship... No, excuse me, Baal, they're the ones with fire. They worship fire, I think. Oh, whatever. It's fire and deities are not good.
Openly come with this idol worship.
No, it's there. But the same time as your impersonalists will also say this. Yes. Your smartest will say this. So that's where you see it's all a mix. It's just a matter of which aspect you're taking. But in other words, you can see from this that all the philosophies and religions are actually saying the same thing. Mm. It's just where they're putting the emphasis. Is it more on karma or more on jnana, or what's their particular mix? That's all. You know, that's basically what it comes down to. You know, so that's the point, is there's one actual spiritual understanding of Godhead, right? But then when you come into the material world, you get all this variety, but the variety is still within these same formulas.
Yeah.
Right? You still get these same things.
And it's flickering because they're material.
So yes.
They're always moving.
You can always move, always change. You have somebody who, you know, when his whole life is very faithful, and then something happens, and then he completely changes, comes up with a new philosophy, or starts a new religion or something like that. It's not an uncommon thing. Mm. So because there is no real basis. It's just their experience in the modes changes, so therefore then that philosophy, its manifestation changes, because their philosophy is based on the modes. So as the modes change, then their philosophy changes. Mm.
Like Prabhupada, in some of his books, and there was even an interview, someone asked, you're coming from, she addresses a Hindu tradition, but we are Christians and Jews. Isn't there a conflict? And it says, I've analyzed all scriptures, I found no conflict between them.
Yeah.
Is he coming from the principle of God and the Jiva, and they just miss
that? Is just the whole point is to surrender to God, follow God's laws, and try to work to please God.
So that he's coming from that perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Because from that, if you look at that, you can take any of these scriptures and explain it. And explain, you know, the pure devotional service. But the point is those aren't the points that anybody else takes. They take something else.
So we're distinguishing between the scriptures and the preachers.
Right. You know, in other words, let's say you take, they're sitting out in Sinai and they're eating manna, right? So manna, you go out in the morning and you collect it there. And if you, it means it, and you'll always get exactly how much you need. If you collect more than you require, it will reduce down to what you require. If you were able to only collect less than what you needed, it would expand to what you required. Right? So you're eating this. God's personally arranging this. But then after so many years, because they were there for 40 years, right? So, you know, after quite a few years, they told God, you know, we're tired of this. You know, can't we have some flesh? You know, so at that moment, all these dead ducks come falling out of the sky, and everybody happily picks them up and starts cooking them and eating. But as they're eating them, they're dying. Right? So then the general point will be, you know, that they displeased God. God was giving them something, they weren't happy with it. So therefore, they complain, and he arranges like this, like that, but, you know, they're not pleased. So that aspect is good, but at the same time, as the idea is that the manna was vegetarian, they wanted something non-vegetarian, won't come into it. Right? Because the interpretation is such. Does that make sense? It means in the garden they were vegetarian. When they were cursed and leaving the garden, then that's when they were given non-vegetarian. It's right there in the verses. It's not there, of course. It's not there in the Christian versions, but if you look at the old law, it's right there. You know, so the whole point is, but it's never interpreted that way, even though it's there. That makes sense. So even the practices then, you know, aren't going to be that different. You know what I'm saying?
Then Prabhupada would very strongly get on that point. Thy shall not kill. And then he'll ask, why are you killing me? You stay on that point forever, and that kind of
thing. Yeah, yeah. No, it makes it difficult. Because they'll say, it says, thou shall not murder. Right?
Yes, Prabhupada puts that point.
That's yeah, so then if that's what they do with thou shalt not kill, what do they do with thou shalt not, you know, commit adultery?
Yeah.
you know, take your neighbor's wife or his donkey, you know, like that. Yeah. You know, so that does that mean that you shouldn't take his donkey, but you can take his car? Yeah. Okay.
So much. So except Vaishnavism, all religion
believes that God has no form.
Basically speaking.
So every representation is like idol worship.
Yeah, so that's why. In theirs, is, it is, but in Vaishnavism, it's not, because it follows the authorized form. But you would probably get those who are pagans believe that there's a form. Mm. You know, just that they don't know that there's, you know, they have so many gods, they don't understand there's a supreme god.
Yes.
You know, yes. So they'll be strong on that, but weak on the other. You know.
Yes. Pagans is demigod worship.
Some yeah, pagans will always be demigod worship. Right, and then you, but your monotheistic, all of them, they are impersonalist, ultimately.
Mm.
Because you remember before is that when you go from materialism, you know, gross materialism, and it doesn't work out, then you take up this pessimism, you know, where you want to get rid of everything. When that doesn't work out, then the soul, because the nature of religion is that there's something higher, where I'm getting my source of happiness. So the soul takes shelter of the idea of a monotheistic.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. But it doesn't say he gives up karma and jnana.
Yes.
Right? So since the last one is the jnana, therefore naturally that it's not a far reach to have given up the idea that, you know, how you say, that the impersonal element, you've kept the impersonal. The interesting thing is that we'll be people eternally, but God's not. You know? Because if that's there, then eternally you can do whatever you like, because, you know, God's not a person. You know? Because otherwise, then, if he walks in on you, then it's a problem.
But he walked in on Adam and Eve.
Yeah, so that was the problem, see? So yeah. You don't want them to walk in on you, you know? Also,
they were in paradise, right? So how can they say that?
Means
when Christians talk about going to heaven, right? God kind of disappears out of the equation.
Yeah. That way everybody can have a good time.
But how do they justify that point of view? Or that, because when Adam and Eve, they were in heaven, no?
Yes.
So God will have to be there.
Yes, but somehow or another, he's just the doorkeeper once you kind of go back. We can understand, it's been, that's the point, is that whatever's there, it has been changed from, you know, the original teachings and made into something new. So if you start that principle, then you can just keep changing it, and it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Do they have a conception of heaven? I mean, heaven?
Who?
The Christians?
There's something that you're there, at least the only ones I've seen, you know, where they really talk about it, where, you know, you see the JW pamphlets and, you know, girls with the fluffy talking lions and, you know, nice boat rides and nice gardens with the family. And,
tigers holding hands with deer and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. But those are the talking ones.
Yes.
You have to distinguish between the talking ones and the non-talking ones.
There must be a lot of old people because they're in the same body as they died, you know.
Yeah. No, that's a real bummer. I mean, how is that heaven? Is that, you know, you're an old geezer and this guy's young. You know, somehow or another, because you joined later, therefore you're punished for that eternally.
It's just pain.
So it's like, you know.
But that commits suicide when you're young.
Huh?
Commits suicide when you're young.
Yeah.
No, but suicide, you never go to heaven.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to get a friend to do it.
So... But the thing is, I think it's for when you develop faith. It's not necessarily how old you are. So if you develop faith when you were young, then even though you're old when you die, you'll have a young form.
That's good impetus to develop faith.
Yeah, earlier, yeah.
So that means when you're like 8 and you really want to be a grown-up, then don't have faith until...
No. That's why they make the distinction of then you'll be 15 or you'll be 40.
Yeah.
So if you developed earlier, then you'll be up to 15. And then, you know, past that, there's probably it'll be 15. But if it's, you waited too late, then you'll end up being 40.
Eternally?
Yeah. I don't know why 40, why not, you know, 29 or something. My mom's still 29.
We mentioned that. That's because the theologians, they're like 60, 70. 40 is good for them.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You know. Maybe they're the ones started the rumors that life begins at 40.
Could be. Very well.
Okay. Each of these people think he himself is the best and the most important. They say it is a bad idea to take shelter at the feet of a spiritual master. Right? Because I'm the best, why would I need someone else? Why would I need to be dependent? Afraid they will not search to find a genuine and saintly master. They will not devotedly serve the spiritual master's feet. Afraid that they will meet an imposter spiritual master and by him be set on the wrong path. Mm. Okay, so that I won't be able to properly search, so therefore I won't bother, right? Or that, what if I get a bad spiritual master, so better no spiritual master. Mm-hmm. Okay, and because afraid of that, they shun even the genuine saintly spiritual masters. Mm-hmm. Some amongst them say that by one's own effort, one can find the spiritual truth in one's own heart. And therefore, there is no need to take shelter of a spiritual master's feet. Right? Because in here is that you get into this. So this idea that there are no saintly persons that in the Protestant is actually due to this impersonalism. Right? It's just, in other words, if there's a little bit more of the karma and good works and like that, then it remains in the Catholicism. But if you add more of the impersonal, then it turns into the Protestant. Does that make sense? It's just kind of, you know, it's just, in other words, good work and mental speculation are both there, you know, but depends on the proportion. But if you put too much more of the impersonal, then it turns into the next one, right? And then here, even within devotional service, or not devotional service, within the Vedic, is if you add too much of the impersonal, they don't want a spiritual master because they already have faith in themselves, that I can do a better job, right? Others among them say that one should accept only the most prominent, most famous spiritual master, Pradhanacharya. The most famous spiritual master is God himself. He is the true teacher, the true protector. He enters our hearts and destroys our sin. There is no need to accept a human being as a spiritual master. Sounds like the Ritviks. Right? So it's just another. It's another form. It's just impersonalism that's been mixed with Vaishnavism. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Others among them say that one should only worship the scriptures, which are given by God. Still others among say that the scriptures are filled with errors. Afraid in this way, they will not honor any scripture. Right? So then you have those that they won't accept the Smriti, because that's given by all the personalities, they'll only accept the Veda. Right? You know, so like this, you get all these varieties. So you can see is that this impersonalism element creates a wide variety of situations.
Yeah. I heard one senior body Hare Krishna chanter explain to a Russian recently about how he had a dream in 1996 and Prabhupada came through, and now he's given knowledge, you know, more than what Prabhupada gave, you know, like this Prabhupada just gave the basics, and then he's given, you know, and whoever's going to take it, they'll take it, you know, and he has like all these videos on YouTube and stuff like this.
No, it's not, that's common, it's been going on since, you know, even before. In dealing with all the local mats here, they'll always say Prabhupada's giving the basis or giving something more. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty standard line. But it's not necessarily, it's just false ego and not understanding what Prabhupada's given. See, it's because Prabhupada will use lay language to explain Vedanta. Yeah. While others, they'll stick to the traditional terminologies. So because they use those terminologies, they can identify that this is technical philosophy. So they'll say, I'm giving technical philosophy, Prabhupada's not. But they're not sharp enough to understand that Prabhupada is talking the same thing but in the common language. It takes more of an expert. It means it takes a master to be able to do that. An expert can use the technical language.
Why do you say more rasic than what Prabhupada
did? That means simply because they'll talk more, they'll focus more on the pastimes, and so they'll say that's rasa, but as we saw before, is that it's the attitude that's rasa. It's not if you're reading about those pastimes, because the point is Ras Krishna is rasa, so anything connected with him, which everything is, you can find rasa anyway.
Gopalpur, he was saying you can't get there by focusing on these.
No, that's the point, is by focusing on them doesn't mean that you'll get into the pastimes. Mm. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, you decide to get into something. Right? It's a fad. Now, if you go down to the right shop and buy all the right paraphernalia and learn the jargon and all the things and the walk and everything, does that mean that now you're good at that? So that's the point. Is just because you read about the pastime, so what? You know, it's nice that you're reading something about Krishna and you're connected to Krishna, so that's great. But that's not the process that the acharyas have recommended. Right? Braja Bhakti is by that total surrender. That's the thing. So whatever you're doing now that you have that feeling of total surrender, that's the important element. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so we'll stop here. Okay, we got to up to 29. 30. There's 50 verses, I think, in this. Mm-hmm. In this poem.
How far you
have? Means now we're up to 29, so we're quite a ways.
21.
Yeah.
21 more?
Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Premyanti.